Voice. I've been on ABC and almost all the major stations. And what I've tried to do over the course of the pandemic is stay true to the data, the published science, and be accurate with respect to what's realistically possible in getting us through the pandemic. And many of you in the audience realized early on that, in fact, it was a treatable illness. The virus was, in fact, treatable. And that was the first step, that our priorities always should have been people sick and getting them through the illness. That should have been the entire American agenda. And I was really impressed by Scott Atlas's book called A Plague Over and the COVID Task Force. And that would be Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx, before that, Dr. Redfield, Mike Pence, my medical school alumni, Brett Gerard, and President Trump. And what we learned from Scott Atlas's book was that the entire time that group of people focused on lockdowns, social distancing, and masking. None of those things treat a sick patient. None of them. And in fact, as Atlas was publishing op-eds in The Hill about lockdowns, I was publishing op-eds saying, treat the sick people so they don't get hospitalized or die. And then it got to the point of U.S. Senate testimony. So I was the lead witness November 19th, 2020 in the U.S. Senate. And I brought America the news that we can treat COVID, that we use drugs in combination. None of them are perfect, but we have to start them early, and we have a protocol, and we can treat them. We proved through a series of yes that we could treat the illness. And that Senate testimony, while Atlas is in my group, he's actually in my group of commentators at Fox News. We were texting, emailing. There's no mention in his book of the U.S. Senate testimony about treating patients. So my point is, the problem with the White House was an oblivion to early treatment, a complete blockade, a complete blindness to treating patients. That was the answer. The answer was to treat patients and get them through the illness, yet they were focusing on everything else but treating the patient. And the ironic part about this is that Trump had COVID early. He received an early version of what's now called the McCullough Protocol, and he got through it. So what we really wanted from Trump, what I wanted from Trump, is I wanted him to step out there and say, I want every senior citizen who gets this illness to be treated like me so I can get through the illness. Yet he never made that a focus. He never really made that a mention. And he got entranced with this other group focusing on masks, social distancing, lockdowns, and not treating sick Americans. And Americans got furious at this, completely furious. We had data published by Gugliakos and colleagues by December of 2020 where we had clear and convincing evidence that we could prevent hospitalizations and deaths. And it's my testimony that 1.2 million Americans who died either directly with COVID, which was 10%, and 90% with a constellation of medical problems and COVID. And of the 6 million hospitalizations, we could have, because of the learning curve, we could have saved two-thirds of those. Two-thirds. And as we sit here today, America is number one in COVID deaths in the world. Number one. And we're only one-sixth of the world's population. And we, you know, are touted to have a world-class healthcare system. How can we be number one in terms of death? It's really a sad statement, do you think about it, for us to be able to have that claim that somehow we're the worst at managing COVID. Well, none of the hospitals had early treatment clinics to treat people at home. That was the only way to prevent hospitalizations and deaths. The mask is not a treatment. Social distancing is not a treatment. Vaccines are not a treatment. Treatment is treatment. But none of the hospitals had outpatient treatment centers. None of them did. None of them did even any research on how to prevent hospitalization and death. They had a complete blind spot to treating the problem right in front of us. And it was very obvious, people who came in late, it was too late to treat the illness. It was too late. So the things that were done in the hospital simply probably would have worked if they were done much earlier. One of the most controversial aspects of care early on was the use of hydroxychloroquine. And the United States, under the leadership of Peter Navarro in the White House, somebody who I personally know, Peter Navarro organized actually a strategic stockpile of hydroxychloroquine. He reached out to me early in the pandemic for help about how we would get this mobilized. It's a very useful drug. We've used it for 65 years for rheumatoid arthritis, systemic lupus, for malaria prevention, safe and effective. Published studies in pregnancy, we just knew hydroxy was the safest drug we had. So we have this stockpile, and Rick Bright inside the House, White House, starts taking all these moves to block hydroxychloroquine. One of the efforts was to make it emergency use authorized only for inpatient use. Yet we wanted to use it as an outpatient. And then it went from there. Within a few months, the FDA Commissioner Hahn, Stephen Hahn, put out an FDA notice that said that that hydroxychloroquine should not be used to treat COVID-19 unless it's in the setting of a clinical trial protocol. Dr. Hahn right now works for Flagship, which is the venture capital firm for Moderna. So he had a gross conflict of interest against any forms of treatment. Separately, what was going on in France in the fall of 2019, Didier Rialt was doing research with hydroxychloroquine, and the French authorities took hydroxychloroquine from being over-the-counter and they made it restricted to prescription. And so immediately the French didn't have access to it. And I think the most glaring evidence that there was a concerted effort against hydroxychloroquine is Clive Palmer. Clive Palmer is the sixth wealthiest guy in Australia, one of the wealthiest people in the world. He owns mines all over the place. He's about 100 times wealthier than Trump. He's a former member of parliament. He started the United Australian Party. He was so concerned about COVID-19 that he brought in a stockpile of hydroxychloroquine to treat every Australian. They have about 29 million people in the country. A strategic stockpile, private, that he took in. The Australian authorities seized it and destroyed it. So in the first year of the pandemic, we heard a lot about hydroxychloroquine. It was an antiviral, and it was fine. It had a partial effect. We learned that aspirin had a big role, corticosteroids, huge role, both inhaled budesonide, oral prednisone, far better than dexamethasone. We learned that aspirin as an anticoagulant, and then Lovenox and other blood thinners. And then we built things out. But I have to tell you, the single greatest thing that I learned about how to treat COVID-19 was I learned from the Bangladesh team led by Chowdhury and colleagues. Did a prospective, double-blind, controlled trial of dilute povidone iodine nasal spray, eye drops, and gargles early in the course of COVID versus matching water, basically, warm water. And demonstrated unequivocally that using iodine very early on drops the PCR positivity rate by 90% in 3 days. 3 days turning PCRs negative and turning the test negative and showing dramatic reductions in hospitalization and need for oxygen. Then 11 additional studies were done. Dilute hydrogen peroxide works, colloidal silver works, xylitol with various components work. The nasal sprays and gargles, far and away, was the most important thing I learned. It was so obvious that this was the way America was going to get through the pandemic. Congresswoman Nancy Mace came out with a big news piece in 2021. It says, why is our government not educating America about nasal sprays and gargles? I recently had a senior citizen who had never had COVID, never took a vaccine, get COVID. But I arm all my patients with information about the nasal sprays and gargles. And by the way, the gargles at work are Scope and Listerine. You can put a few drops of iodine in it and really, you know, supercharge them. And he managed his entire syndrome just with the nasal sprays and gargles, plus important nutraceuticals, including aspirin over the counter, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D at a high dose, and now we use a supplement basically from Indian derivative curcumin, and then over-the-counter famotidine. Famotidine is Pepcid. That over-the-counter bundle is all he needed, and he got through it. That over-the-counter bundle is largely what carried Canada, the UK, and Australia. It took us a few months to figure this out, but you know, we're now 3 years since we've had a nursing home outbreak of any type. We never had a K-12 school outbreak in the United States. We never had a bona fide college campus outbreak that was meaningful. We never had, outside of a meatpacking plant in the upper Midwest, we never really had any employment outbreaks. And we had employers that went completely by WebEx, office from home, like the big financial services companies, insurance companies. And then we had other companies that never went by Zoom, Starbucks. Isn't it interesting that you could work for a financial services company and be on Zoom at home, and you could be forced to take a vaccine or lose your job, even though you're working at home, you're not even going to the office. But at Starbucks, you'd come in a crowded little coffee shop and work for Starbucks, no vaccine mandate. The things that we saw through the pandemic are beyond reason. They're just beyond our ability to comprehend what happened. The things we can pick example after example after example of things that didn't make sense. But if I was to leave you with 5 points before we get into questions, this is what I would say. Point number one, the virus only spread from a sick person to a susceptible person. It never spread from somebody without symptoms. All the mathematical modeling studies were wrong. You know, this idea that anybody could have it and it was going to spread like wildfire, the modeling studies were so bad that in Dallas, where I live, they took our convention center, they made it an army hospital because Andrew Cuomo in New York said it's going to spread like a tidal wave. And they spent gazillions of dollars. They had ICU beds and IVs and ventilators. They made an army hospital on our convention center. And I was writing op-eds. I go, it doesn't spread that way. I said, we'll never use the army hospital. I was right. We never used the army hospital. I mean, we had hospitalized patients with COVID, but we weren't overwhelmed. So the modeling of this about asymptomatic spread was completely wrong. It only spreads from a sick person to a susceptible person, just the way influenza spreads and just the way other infectious pneumonia spread. And if we ever get a new pandemic, let's never be tricked into thinking that anybody can have it. We need to do elbow bumps or what have you. So because there's no asymptomatic spread, that means we never needed to shut down our schools and our churches and our places of employment. It was never needed. We never needed to social distance. The only thing we needed to do when someone got sick is to kind of stay away from others. Very important. 85% of the spread occurred in the home because it was inevitable. We were taking care of each other. And so what we learned there is to get lots of fresh air and everybody make sure they have this kind of bundle of over-the-counter remedies, and particularly the viricidal nasal washes and gargles. I tell people now, if you're taking care of a sick person at home, start gargling and doing the nasal sprays yourself. It will reduce the chances of getting the illness or getting the severe illness. You can apply it to a common cold. And it's a wonderful thing to learn. I didn't know this before COVID. First time I had COVID myself, I didn't know it. It was in 2020, and it was in my nose and sinuses for about 5 days, and it invaded my lungs. It's like, now that I know now, I start right away with any type of cold. I use a dilute iodine spray. And it's wonderful to use. There's one, it's a brand name, it's pretty expensive, but it's called Cofix RX, but it's got a little stronger iodine concentration, carrageenan, which helps it stay up in the passages. Vitamin D they've added to it, and xylitol, which actually inhibits organism growth. So that's point number one, no asymptomatic spread. Point number two, the FDA said we can only do the test in somebody acutely sick. The WHO said that. Even the CDC today says only test when someone's sick. That means all this routine testing that everybody did for school and employment and travel, all of that was against the FDA. The FDA said never to do that. The World Health Organization came out and said, stop doing it for travel. All of it was wrong. All of it was an overreaction based on fear. The test should have only been in acutely sick people as an aid in diagnosis and test once. We learned that the test stays positive after COVID for many, many months. Many, many months. So this idea of, oh, let me test to see if it's safe to go back to work. No. The other thing about testing, which was absolutely crazy, is we knew it was a very contagious virus, that people coughed in the air or they sneezed, you could get it. And it's true, you could. So there was no reason to put the swab way back up in the nose when it's so contagious. It's everywhere. If you have it, it's going to come out. It's going to come out on a Kleenex, for crying out loud. So no one should have had a deep swab put in the back of their nose. And I just made you remember that, right? It's terrible. It was like, it was absolutely, again, the thing to learn about this is when things do not make sense, you're being tested for the most contagious disease of within mankind. It's everywhere in the air, it's in the snot, it's everywhere. But wait a minute, but when we go to do a test, we have to go 8 inches up into your nose. No. No, you can just do a little this. You hand them a Kleenex, they can use that. Point number three. Natural immunity turned out to be really big. In the first wave of the pandemic, once one got through it, you couldn't get it a second time. Very few people could get it a second time, all the way through Delta. And so we relied on this. So I would make a few house calls once I was already through it. I had one of the early versions. I had people cough all over me. I couldn't get it. You couldn't get it a second time through Delta. It was so strong that I was helping a couple of countries in Southeast Asia. They had run out of masks. They had run out of everything. They said, how are we going to manage this? I said, take your COVID-recovered people and let them care for the sick people. And that's exactly what they did, and they got through the pandemic. So natural immunity was great up until December 10th of 2021. Now, I know this because 2 days earlier, I was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and I had told Joe Rogan, you can't get it twice. And then the news broke. Fortunately, I went on TV that night. I think I was on Laura Ingraham. And I went on and said, listen, update. You can get it a second time. Because what we learned is with Omicron, 79% of people were fully vaccinated getting it. So you could get it through vaccine immunity. You could get it through natural immunity. And so the natural immunity still to this day is about roughly 60% protective against any second infection. But second infections occur. But what we know about natural immunity, and probably the best paper to quote, is from the U.S. prison system, Chin and colleagues, New England Journal of Medicine, October of 2022. This is astonishing. 59,000 prisoners, 17,000 staff. They're monitoring COVID, and they get plenty of COVID in the prisons. Once somebody had gone through the Delta and Omicron phase of it, if they got a subsequent infection, zero risk of hospitalization and death. Zero. And let me tell you, the prisoners want to go to the hospital to get a break from the prison. Zero risk of hospitalization and death. So it's over with. Once you've been through it, now it's going to be like the common cold. That was one of the most important papers published. So point number three, natural immunity is robust against severe outcomes. You can get a second time, okay, but it's robust. I mean, a lot of people don't even test now. It's because like the common cold. Point number four is that the virus has always been treatable, as I've outlined. Any new pandemic will be treatable. We should never assume that any new infection is unassailable. We should not make that assumption. We should assume that there are treatments and doctors should step out and try things to treat patients. Governments don't treat patients. Task forces don't treat patients. Doctors treat patients. And doctors should always step out and be in the forefront. And what America wants to hear from with the next pandemic is they want to hear from doctors who are figuring out how to treat patients. They don't want to hear from bureaucrats, and they don't want, you know, it got so ridiculous. It got so ridiculous in my first U.S. Senate testimony that when Senator Johnson asked the minority witness, Dr. Ashish Jha, who's the current coronavirus coordinator, who's advising America on treatment of COVID, he asked Dr. Jha, have you ever seen a COVID patient? Have you ever treated a COVID patient? And then he, in a very embarrassed way, said, no, I never have. And then I said, let the record stand that Dr. Jha, who's never seen, examined, or treated a COVID patient, is giving us advice not to treat COVID. And so the fourth point, and that's what this is going to be about, is about the vaccines. And as it turns out, on December 7th, 2022, after three sets of U.S. Senate testimony on this, after exhaustive review, after, you know, tens of thousands of manuscripts on vaccines, 4,300 manuscripts on vaccine injuries, disabilities, and deaths, I made the call at the conclusion of our hearing to withdraw all the vaccines off the market, that they're not safe for human use. And I can tell you, it's 6 months later, and what we've learned is even worse than what we knew in December of 2020. It's going to be very, it would be impossible for me to reverse my call. When people say, well, Dr. McCullough, what do you think now? I said, listen, I've already said take them off the market. I'm not going to change my mind on this. They should be off the market. All the COVID vaccines, that's what I called in December of 2022. So with that introduction, so these kind of 5 points that when I went over, no asymptomatic spread, no need for routine testing, only test with acutely sick, natural immunity is robust against severe outcomes, this infection was treatable, all the infections are treatable, we should always treat first, and number five, the vaccines are not safe. With that, I'll turn it over to Ken Liang. Ken's going to go over how we're going to operate and conduct this program. And Ken, let me give you my... Lions for Liberty.